This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is Friday, March 8th. Happy International Women's Day. I've been seeing a lot of posts on social media about that. And if you're celebrating, happy. I like to actually celebrate and support women all day, every day, because it's really important to me. And that includes all of my sisters, both SIS sisters, CIS sisters, and my trans and non-binary sisters. So, hey, do you have a question that you want me to answer on the show? You should call our voicemail line. Leave me your question and maybe it will get answered on the show and you'll win a prize. The number is 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Now, for the past 2 weeks, you have been listening to the show I recorded live in Mexico when I was at Swing Set Takes Desire, which is this amazing event. I can't wait to go back this year. I'm counting the days. If you're interested in more about that, you can go to swingsetdesire.com. We had some talk on there about non-monogamy, and so we're going to continue in that vein with our guest today. Let me tell you about her. Jenny Ewan is an award-winning news reporter who covers a wide variety of local, provincial, and national stories and has written for the Toronto Sun, Now Magazine, and CBC Radio. She is a proud polyamory partner and has a dog named Wampa. She lives in Toronto. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So something you didn't talk about in your bio, but we are going to talk about tonight, is that you also wrote a book called Polyamorous.
Yes,
and
that's right.
I was struck by the preface. In the preface, you actually talk about how you got into polyamory, and you talk about the affair you had. Was that hard to write? I kept thinking to myself, oh, this is intense to open a book and read this. Like, are people are going to judge her? Did you have those concerns?
I absolutely did. And I contemplated whether or not I should write about it. But in the end, I think for me, it was the most honest approach to opening a book about polyamory, especially with the following chapter being about my relationships with my two partners. And so I wanted people to know the reason how, you know, the why I came to polyamory and the reasons why. So I do open it up with a very kind of explicit telling of an affair I had with a person I met on an airplane very randomly, and who was married with two children as well, too. So, and just how that fell apart and what I kind of experienced with cheating firsthand and how I felt, what the destruction that it caused and ultimately what led me to being more honest with myself as well as being more honest with any partners that I would have in the future. So, that was part and parcel the reason why I decided to write about that, but you're always going to be judged. So I do keep that in mind, but you know, at the end of the day, it's no one else's life to live but my own. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Well, it was brave to put yourself out there, but it was also really important because sometimes having an affair does lead to polyamory in one way or another. But often I think we don't talk about that much. You know, we like to put a good shine on polyamory kind of for the general public. And so often there are stories of people who, you know, woke up one day or have their entire life and felt like, I want to love and partner with multiple people. And everyone's shiny and happy about it. But sometimes the way you discover polyamory is actually by finding out that monogamy doesn't work for you.
Right. And, in my case, zero monogamy was something that I kept on doing over and over again, and I wanted to take the time for myself to figure out what I needed in my own life, what I was looking for, boundaries, that sort of thing. When I came across my two relationships, which ended up being two of my life partners, it really kind of sparked the whole issue of polyamory. And for us, it wasn't really necessarily, we didn't even know what polyamory was. So we didn't know the definition of it. In fact, for a year and a half or so, I kind of wrestled with who should I pick. You know, there was all my friends and family, even my therapist kept saying you have to pick one because that's just how life is. And we didn't really know that there was another option. So for us, it was more of a creative thinking outside of the box solution in order for us to keep our connections with one another. And that's our story. But for other people, sometimes they do feel like they've been polyamorous their entire life, or they've always felt attraction to other people and had, you know, more love to give. Some people just wanted the variety. People have different reasons, and it was just, you know, important for me to illustrate what our reasons were in our own story.
So can you tell me a little bit about the polyamorous relationship that you're in now?
Sure, yeah. So I have a legal husband. He goes by Charlie in the book. Both my partners use pseudonyms just because of privacy issues. My other partner is named Adam in the book. So Adam and I, we work together at the Sun, and he's a photographer. He was a photographer before he retired recently. He's much older than I am. He's about 30 years, but he often says it's 29 and a half because it's just under the perv cutoff. we met at work, and just kind of sparks flew. And around the same time, I had met my now husband while traveling to Montreal on, you know, a comedy. I was covering a comedy festival there, so it was a very sort of random meeting. And the fact that I was able to meet both of them within weeks of each other, and then I had these, relationships were starting with both of them. And at that point, because I had the affair, I wanted to be honest and open with them. So I told them about one another. So they both knew that each other was in my life. And that's kind of how our love triangle started. And so everyone was sort of on a don't ask, don't tell sort of spectrum at that point. But because we ended up being so stuck after so long, and it was heartbreaking because it's like, do you want to lose your left arm or your right? Because I love them both. It was really hard to choose. And then it was Adam who, after all that time, brought up, you know, what if the three of us could work together? The three of us could be in a relationship where we're, you know, Jenny kind of shares both of us. How would that work? What would it look like? Could it be a solution? And, it ended up being a solution for us for polyamory.
And how long have you been together?
2013, I believe, is when the summer of 2013 is when everything started. And then my husband, so Charlie is from the UK originally. So we met in in Montreal and went on a date, and then he had to fly right back. So we ended up doing the whole long-distance Skype communication thing, and I would fly there, and he would fly over here. But it was also really premature to figure out whether or not we had a long-term relationship or any sort of future, just because it was every time we'd see each other, it was like vacation mode. Meanwhile, with Adam here, he was much older than I was. I was starting to contemplate whether I wanted children. Would it be smart to have a relationship with somebody that was already had a grown son, didn't really want to do it again? What would that look like? So it was kind of a lot of balls in the air, so to speak. And we started out on different parallel paths, but all kind of ended up together.
And what is the relationship like between your two male partners? Because you are in a kind of a V configuration where they aren't romantically or sexually involved with each other, mm-hmm. only with you. Do they have names for each other? How do they get along?
So, Charlie ended up moving over to Toronto with me after a year and a half after we started talking about this whole idea of polyamory. And he had already been looking to move somewhere, he just didn't know where. So it actually, the timing sort of worked out. And so he came over here, he went to school, and my partners actually decided to have a dinner together without me, because I tend to helicopter sometimes. And he said, no, we want to form our relationship organically. So they went out to dinner without me. They had, over pasta and wine, they talked about their own lives and how this whole setup would work, how much they, cared about me. They both said, our job is to really take care of her. And, she takes care of us so well. So they ended up really bonding over that dinner. And over time, it's just they've grown closer and closer together that Adam says, oh, well, maybe we should I've come up with a nickname for us. Maybe we should call ourselves Co, as in co-partners. So they're now known as Co and Co, which is the dedication in the front of the book, too. So, yeah, it's very sweet. They they just call themselves Co whenever they're around me. And they call me the chairman as well, too, because I can be kind of Mao-ish from time to time. But it's very endearing. Yeah.
We got to take our first commercial break, but they do sound lovely. I mean, the whole story is in the book, so people should definitely read it. All the ups and downs and how they got to where they are today. So let's take a commercial break, hear from our great sponsors, and when we come back, more with Jenny Ewan. Hey, why keep your crush on the hush? The Pleasure Chest has everything you need to heat up your Valentine's Day. Check out their sexy selection of pleasure products and couples toys to please your partner, surprise your crush, or treat yourself to a little more self-love. Enjoy free shipping through Valentine's Day and get a free Volita vibrator with any in-store or online Fun Factory purchase over $129 through February 15th. Need a little pleasure refresher or a fun date night? Drop by their LA, New York, or Chicago locations for a free workshop on how to achieve the ultimate orgasm, improve your oral skills, give a better blowjob. If you can't make it in, this is something really cool. From February 7th to the 13th, they are going to be doing live 30-minute workshops at Pleasure Chest Store's Instagram stories. So every day this is going to happen at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And they're going to do tips, tricks, toys, a live Q&A from their sex specialists. It's actually a really cool way, if you're not in one of the cities where they are, to take a class. And as always, when you go to pleasurechest.com to shop, use the code Tristan and get a free massage candle with your purchase. Hey gang, you may already know about the tried and true Clone a Willy to make a silicone replica of any penis. In fact, a while back, we had actual listeners try it out and their reviews were stellar. Well, now there's something brand new. The Clone a Pussy Plus Sleeve Kit.
First of its kind, Clone a Pussy Plus allows anyone to cast an exact replica of a vulva in silicone and attach it to the included silicone masturbation sleeve. This is a truly one-of-a-kind toy and perfect for long-distance relationships. The creation process itself can be really fun, and the results make a great gift for any occasion. Clone a Willy is a woman-run company, and their products are sourced in the U.S. and hand-assembled in Portland, Oregon. And you know I've got a deal for you. Use the promo code Tristan for 20% off your entire order on cloneawilly.com. Hey, why don't you clone it and bone it?
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey everyone, have you heard of hashtag lube life? It's a new line of lubricants, and they sent me a big box, and of course I dug right in to try them all out for you. First of all, I'm not usually a fan of flavored lubes, but even I admit that their flavors are really good. It comes in watermelon and mint chocolate chip, and they're tasty, and they're water-based. And they make two other formulas, which are of special note for me. A water silicone hybrid, which is great for use with high quality silicone sex toys, and a silicone gel. It's really rare to find a silicone lube in a texture other than super slick. So this gel, I think, is a game changer, especially for anal sex. Plus, all their products are made in California in their USDA certified organic facility, and they're a great value. I've got some cool pics on my Instagram, and you can also follow them on their Instagram at hashtag lubelife, but write out the word hashtag. Right now, you can get 20% off all orders of hashtag lubelife at lubelife.com. Use the code 20Tristan. That's 20Tristan. If you lube it, they will come. Welcome back to the show. I am talking today with Jenny Ewan about her book, Polyamorous. Jenny, there are also some wonderful profiles of other people, lots of other people in various configures of polyamorous relationships. And, you know, I appreciate that you have a journalist eye towards this. You know, you're obviously a really talented journalist. And so the profiles are very rich and you can sort of picture the folks as you go on. I was surprised though that some of them were like brutally honest with you, including about things that they were ambivalent or unsure of or hadn't quite made a decision about. Did that surprise you?
Mm-hmm. Not really, I guess. Often I get the question, how did you get people to start talking to you? And especially with reporters, polyamorous people tend to be a little bit shy sometimes, or they don't really know how to approach. So I joined a number of polyamorous Facebook groups and said, hey, listen, you know, I myself am in this configuration. I identify as polyamorous. If you're comfortable, tell me your stories. If you feel like using a pseudonym or a first name only, you know, I'm totally fine with that. So I think respecting their privacy and definitely helped as well, too. But I told them what I wanted to do, which was write a book about polyamorous relationships across Canada specifically, just because I am Canadian. And yes, the first part of the book is about my own story, but we're really not that interesting, at least not to me. So I wanted to dig into different reasons why people came to polyamory and what kind of what the relationships were like, what kind of challenges they were facing, especially in the legal part of things. And every province in Canada has different unique challenges, different sort of social vibes. So that was the whole reason why I wanted to, you know, get in touch with different people throughout the country. So yeah, it really, I don't think I was surprised per se. I think it was just, it was cool that they were opening up to me and explaining just what life looked like for them and what some of their concerns were.
So, like you said, you're Canadian, and in Canada, the estimates are roughly the same in terms of the United States. Something like 4 to 5% of the population is probably polyamorous, but we have such bad mm-hmm. sort of statistics and studies about that. But are you, first of all, are you the first person to write a book about polyamory in Canada specifically?
Well, there's another, Alicia Bunyan-Sampson, who I think is either putting out a book or has put out a book called Diary of a Polyamorous Black Girl. So that's hitting the shelves as well, too. In Canada, though, I think I might be. I know that there's a lot of how-to books that are out there, but I believe most of them are from the U.S., so quite possibly. Yeah, quite possibly.
Well, speaking of the life of a polyamorous black girl, so people who practice polyamory are obviously marginalized by our society in various ways, depending on who they are. But lots of folks are marginalized within polyamory communities. And so you have a whole chapter dedicated to this. And you yourself are a woman of color, which mm-hmm. is groundbreaking because, you know, in general, in polyamorous communities and in our white supremacist society, lots of white people write the books, lots of white people do the studies of other white people. The media coverage mm-hmm. we see is of white people. So right. You actually interviewed lots of folks of color. All of those were really fascinating. What are some of the things that they told you?
So when I was coming up with this chapter called I was coming up with the chapter that talked about some of the underrepresented communities within polyamory. That included people of color, people with mental health issues, people with disabilities, indigenous people. So people of color were telling me specifically that they felt not included within the polyamory community just because of some of the unique challenges that they had. For instance, Kevin Patterson, who wrote a book called Love's Not Colorblind, he talks about how when he would go to polyamorous events and you could count on one hand just the number of black people that would show up at these events, and they would often get fetishized, and people didn't understand just why that was problematic, saying things like, taste the chocolate, for example. So, and then if you go to complain about these things to the people that organize events and they happen to be white, then how do you get the feeling that it's not appropriate, or how do we solve this across to them? So that was some of the things that they were saying, as well as, you know, they didn't really feel like they had their own community. So I actually got in touch with a Facebook group called Non-Monogamous BIPOC, which is people of color as well as indigenous people. And they have their own events, and they, for them, you know, it's interesting to meet people that are of the same skin tone, just because it's like, hey, you know, I'm Muslim, you're Muslim too, we're both polyamorous, we have something in common, we can talk about this. And I think for them it's advocacy as well too. They want to have more of a voice in the polyamorous community overall, and as much as they want allies that are white, they also want people to do their own research and say, you know, we want you to approach us and, you know, help us become more within the community. So, that's a lot of, that's basically the brunt of what I've been hearing from people of color.
And As a woman of color, do you feel like you felt marginalized, discriminated against, fetishized when you first accessed community?
Not in particular, not in my situation, just because we're at this point pretty closed. And we're, you know, I'm flexible if my partners want to seek any outside connections, but we didn't really go on any sort of dating sites or any events. We went to a couple, you know, poly meetups, but no, I didn't really feel fetishized. But I know for a fact that it does exist. But as a person of color, I mean, if I were to go out and date, would I have those problems come up? You know, probably, maybe, and then yeah. So it's hard for me to answer that, but. At this point, no, not really.
Well, and I think that's why kind of both approaches are really important, because yes, I want to see all poly communities be more diverse, but I also think polyamorous folks of color taking and making their own space that's POC mm-hmm. only is also really important. And it's great to see some of these groups and also people that you interviewed who are doing that, who are creating. I was surprised that, you know, this one person belonged to this polyamorous group that was just everyone, but mostly white people. And then she was like, oh, let's do a meetup for people of color. And something like 160 people signed up or RSVP'd. You know, it was the first time anyone had done that. And that, so that showed immediately, oh, this is really needed, right? I mean, this is what people want.
And especially when people of color also can be marginalized in other ways as well, too, maybe education-wise, financially. So if you're, if these polyamorous meetups are by and large, like you have to have the time to get to places or you have to have the resources to get to places, then they may not be accessible. That particular Facebook group is trying to make things more accessible to people that, you know, so that they may not have to go all the way downtown in order to attend one of these meetups. It could be at somebody's house so that they don't have to pay a cover charge or buy drinks and spend money that they probably can't afford to spend. So that also is a part of that as well.
Well, we're going to take another commercial break. I want to talk more about issues around race. And I've also, you have a great section in your book about mental health issues, which I think is really important. So we've got a lot more to talk about. Stay with us more with Jenny when we return.
Hey gang, you may already know about the tried and true Clona Willy to make a silicone replica of any penis. In fact, a while back, we had actual listeners try it out and their reviews were stellar. Well, now there's something brand new. The Clona Pussy Plus Sleeve Kit. First of its kind, Clona Pussy Plus allows anyone to cast an exact replica of a vulva in silicone and attach it to the included silicone masturbation sleeve. This is a truly one-of-a-kind toy and perfect for long-distance relationships. The creation process itself can be really fun, and the results make a great gift for any occasion. Clona Willy is a woman-run company, and their products are sourced in the U.S. and hand-assembled in Portland, Oregon. And you know I've got a deal for you. Use the promo code Tristan for 20% off your entire order on clonawilly.com. Hey, why don't you clone it and bone it?
Hi everyone, we're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, there are really compelling studies that say that you have to say something a bunch of times before it really sinks into your brains. So you know what I'm going to tell you about again? That's right. Hashtag lube life. So they sent me a big box of lubes and I tried them all out. I mean, the first thing that stuck out for me is that they have a cool hybrid lube, which is part water, part silicone, because I use a lot of silicone sex toys, which means I often don't like or use silicone lubes. Now, they do have a silicone lube that is a gel formula, and that is a really big deal because there's really only one other company that makes a gel, and I think a gel, a thicker texture, is much better for anal sex. So if you love silicone but don't love the really slickness of it for anal sex, this gel could be really good. And then they said they were sending me water-based lubes that were flavored, and immediately I had the eye roll, like, what? Because I'm just not into flavored lubes. Maybe there's one brand that I like, but everyone else tastes like medicine to me. Well, guess what? First of all, they picked two of my favorite flavors, so that was very strategic on their part. And they're both really good, watermelon and mint chocolate chip. Kind of amazing. Well, you know I like to hook you up with a deal, and I'm going to. You can get 20% off all orders of hashtag LubeLife at lubelife.com if you use the code 20Tristan. That's 20Tristan, okay? And they have a cute little tagline, which I have to remind you what it is. It's hashtag LubeLife. If you lube it, they will come. So I'm talking today with Jenny Ewan about her book, Polyamorous, and continuing our conversation from before the break, one thing that I found fascinating was you quoted several people, but there was a longer profile of someone who is First Nations and polyamorous. And I wondered if you would talk about like some of the particular issues for Indigenous folks versus people of color. Mm-hmm.
So the person that I interviewed, her name is Kim Talbert. She writes on the website Critical Polyamorous, and she's a professor at the University of Alberta. And she talked about how polyamory, that term in itself, isn't quite what, like, Indigenous people have been practicing polyamory for much longer than Western society has. And although polyamory isn't what she would actually call it, but that's the she calls it the settler's language, and that's what is available to her, so that's what she has to use it. But the way that polyamory is practiced within Indigenous circles is something called teospe. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that loosely translates to extended family. So we look at families that break up with divorce, and in Indigenous cultures, it's more about having a family. Like, it takes a whole village to raise a family. So she was raised by her grandma and her aunts and her mother, and so if a father had left, it didn't really have such a big impact. So So she basically says that's the whole, they've been doing it much longer than we have ever had. So it's basically putting everything, it's basically putting everything into this box where it doesn't really match up to what they've been practicing all along, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And the idea, I think, just that polyamory is a sort of rebellion of the standard is a white supremacist idea. It is a colonial idea because it sets the tone that there is one norm, and that norm came from Europeans and white people. And she's talking about a totally different thing.
Exactly. She had this quote, when the couple became central, if you look at the histories of marriages in the United States, not only was that imposed on indigenous people. It was imposed on immigrants and formerly enslaved people. And there was a need to make a nuclear family the building block of the nation in the U.S. and Canada. I was raised by my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mom. Who cares if my dad was gone by the time I was three? I had aunties and uncles and a big extended family. I realized that settlers were telling us that our families were broken and ours probably work better than theirs do. It doesn't mean that we don't have hardship. It doesn't mean people don't lose their jobs or break up, but you've got an extended family, you can weather those hardships better. I think that's pretty well said.
I loved that part of the book, and I think it's important. It's an important story, the whole notion that we can't even translate polyamory into a word, right? There is no indigenous word for polyamory because they structure their families and relationships differently anyway. So we have a question from a listener on Facebook who asks, how can we better strive to ensure polyamorous communities are more intersectionally inclusive and welcoming on an ongoing basis?
I think, so we have the term polynormative, right? So it means that it's just the way the society could accept polyamory, so as close to monogamy as possible, which is why you have the annoying pictures of the three pairs of white feet poking out from underneath the bed sheets. Whenever
the deadly white feet, deadly white feet. I hate it so much. Yes.
Yeah, we see that time and time again when it comes to polyamorous articles written online or in the newspaper. And so that's the way that society can kind of cope with polyamory. And I think there needs to be more of these stories that are told. So people like Kevin Patterson that writes about, you know, race issues, other people of color that talk about some of the unique challenges they have in their communities and the fetishizing and other issues and whatnot. So I think the more you talk about things, the more normal things become. And I think people that are in the broader polyamory community needs to present themselves as allies to these people. So saying, you know, what can we do? How can we bridge this gap here? I think conversations is the key thing. And, you know, ideas come from conversations. What do you think?
Yeah, no. And I also want to say, I agree with you, and I think this applies not just to white people in polyamory communities, but across the board. I was at a summit recently that was put on by Showing Up for Racial Justice, and one of the things that they do is they create spaces where white people can teach other white people about white supremacy and racism, and therefore white people are doing the labor, essentially, that we often put on people of color. And one of the things that they really emphasize is that more than, like, let's invite people of color or make a person of color one of the leaders of the group, that white people actually have to do some deep internal work. And that's, like, ongoing. And so my encouragement to white people is, yes, try to be inclusive. Yes, more representation. Yes, people in positions of power. But also dedicate a certain amount of time to doing internal work, to trying to unlearn some of these ideas, to confront your own whiteness, to confront white supremacy. I think that is a piece of it, too, in terms of being more inclusive.
Right. And it goes beyond people of color as well, too. I mean, in the book, we talk about people that identify as trans. There was a person by the name of Mary Claire who I talked to who said that every time, it was fine to go on dating sites and meet up with people, but then when they found out that she was trans, then it would turn into a fetish conversation or a trans 101 conversation. And it was really unfortunate that they couldn't go past a first date and have a thriving long-term relationship because she identified as trans. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, again, I think we have to constantly check our own privileges. And if we feel like, oh, I need to know more about this, we can't necessarily rely on the marginalized folks to teach us that, mm-hmm. right? Because doing Trans 101 is probably really annoying for trans people, especially if they've been out for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the intersection of polyamory and mental health. This is one of the most fascinating parts of the book that I really loved, and I want to get deeper into it. So let's take a break, hear from our great sponsors who make this show possible, and when we return, more with Jenny and her book, Polyamorous. Hey, why keep your crush on the hush? The Pleasure Chest has everything you need to heat up your Valentine's Day. Check out their sexy selection of pleasure products and couples toys to please your partner, surprise your crush, or treat yourself to a little more self-love. Enjoy free shipping through Valentine's Day and get a free Volita vibrator with any in-store or online Fun Factory purchase over $129 through February 15th. Need a little pleasure refresher or a fun date night? Drop by their LA, New York, or Chicago locations for a free workshop on how to achieve the ultimate orgasm, improve your oral skills, give a better blowjob. If you can't make it in, this is something really cool. From February 7th to the 13th, they are going to be doing live 30-minute workshops at Pleasure Chest Store's Instagram stories. So every day this is going to happen at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And they're going to do tips, tricks, toys, a live Q&A from their sex specialists. It's actually a really cool way, if you're not in one of the cities where they are, to take a class. And as always, when you go to pleasurechest.com to shop, use the code Tristan and get a free massage candle with your purchase.
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, I want to remind everyone that I love to hear from you. Will you call me? Will you call me and give me your comments? Give me your questions. Tell me about what shows you like. Ask some sex advice questions for the next show that we do that has a big Ask Tristan segment. You can call us 24 hours a day at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I've been talking today with Jenny Ewan about her book, Polyamorous. And one of the things that I think we're just starting some conversations about, certainly Deborah Annapol had a section about this in her book when she revised her book on polyamory. But you talk about kind of these intersections between mental health and neurodiversity and polyamory. So I wonder if you'll share some of those stories. I think you talk to someone who's on the spectrum, and you also talk to someone who had borderline personality disorder.
I was looking through some of the polyamory discussion boards, and some members had identified as being autistic or, you know, having other mental health challenges such as borderline personality disorder. For one person who had BPD, they also said that they were poly, and they said, not going to sugarcoat it. It does make it harder. Thankfully, my partner, is amazingly patient with me when I have a freak out over something stupid. Poly has really helped me by forcing me to deal with emotions I usually would just try and wall up. And I think with other people, another person is diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, It was really hard to tell whether or not polyamory does, whether that, Asperger's does affect their relationship, because it depends on whether it's a personality trait, what you consider a personality trait, and what is as a result of a mental social condition, and provided that you even believe these conditions exist. So it really, it really kind of blurs the lines of how it complicated polyamory contributes to relationships when you have mental health conditions.
Well, and I certainly think if we're calling communication one of the foundations of polyamory, certainly our mental health affects how we communicate, how we behave, mm-hmm. how we react to things, and especially, I think, jealousy. I mean, I can see a direct correlation there. You quoted Dr. Oren Amate. Is that how I say it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
And one of the things that I loved about some of the stuff that they said is that, you know, there are these multiple ways to deal with jealousy, and it's entirely dependent on the personality, the resources, all the different people involved, and also maybe peers and other people who are kind of in their ear talking about what they think they should do. It reminded me also of how you said when you were dating both your partners, everyone, including your therapist, was like, you have to choose, as if you were stuck in exactly. some romantic comedy, right?
Yeah, that's pretty bang on. And yeah, it is interesting to see how jealousy does affect people with mental health issues. When I was speaking with Leanne from Toronto, she said that she struggles with anxiety and an eating disorder. So, those issues, they intersect with polyamory whenever she starts dating someone new, and then she feels like she has to come out about her mental health. So it can be challenging due to shame and stigma, and you know, maybe sometimes even jealousy. She says her eating disorder can affect how she feels about her body, and in turn how she feels on going on dates and being physical with new people. And sometimes her partners will say some things accidentally that trigger body image issues, and she has a set of boundaries. And because she dates multiple people, this process, you know, can be really tiring.
Well, and also, you know, it struck me in many of these profiles, probably all of them, that yes, there are challenges that are unique to polyamory. But when these folks dug into what their lives are like and what they were contending with, many of this applies to monogamous people too, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, polyamory doesn't protect you from cheating, or sorry, not from, from being, well, actually it doesn't protect you from cheating, because
no,
there
right.
could be, yeah.
People can still cheat from, and be polyamorous.
Exactly,
right.
Yes. Doesn't protect you from jealousy, from loneliness. So there have been times when both my partners don't feel like going to a float spa with me. So they're like, have fun, see ya. It doesn't protect you from that. So I think what's interesting about polyamory is that monogamous people, it can apply, some of the same principles can apply to monogamous relationships as well too, like the open communication thing and not bearing emotional time bombs and you know, talking about things as they arise, and including being attracted to somebody else and jealousy issues. So I mean, for all the things that are unique to polyamory, they can be used for monogamous relationships as well too. And my thing with that is that my book, you know, emphasizes that polyamory isn't better than monogamy. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
You should do you is my main message.
And it's a great one, right? I think the notion that monogamous people are all sort of stuck in an old-fashioned relationship structure, or are blinded or haven't yet been enlightened, is bullshit. I mean, everyone's got to choose the relationship structure that works for them. But I think the stories
Oh, yeah.
And the stories in your book, I feel like that people really love to hear real life stories. I just think they offer a lot. And, you know, you sort of like tell your story at the beginning and then you're like, okay, enough about me. And you get into the lives of these other folks. And so there's just a lot packed into this book. And also, I think what people will really take away from it is you say it's not a how-to book, but there are tools and strategies and experiences in there that people can absolutely take clues from. So I think it's a great book. Yeah, I recommend it. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was going to say that I think people can pick and choose of what actually applies to them. Not every story in this book is going to resonate with them, but it's not supposed to be a how-to guide, because there's already great how-to guides out there, including your book, Opening Up, and More Than Two, and Ethical Slut. But I wanted to tell stories, and you know that's what my job is. And I think that if people can take something away from reading other people's stories and apply it to their own lives, even if it's just, that resonates with me. You know, that is something that I can see in my own life, or that's a communication strategy that I can use. Then, I think that's a great service.
I want to tell folks how they can find the book and find you. Very cleverly, you have polyamorousbook.com. Hey, first of all, that's a score. How did you get that? Oh my God, that's such a good URL.
It was available.
It's amazing. Yeah. You're also on Twitter as Sun Reporter Yuen, Y-U-E-N. Mm-hmm. On Instagram at Polyamorous Book. On Facebook, Jenny Yuen Writes. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Our guest will be Rachel Kramer Bussell, a favorite around here, as well as contributors reading sexy stories from Best Women's Erotica. This is going to be a good show. Good for your ear holes. You know what I mean? Until then, you can get me on Twitter, Instagram, and yes, still the dreaded Facebook, across all platforms at Tristan Terramino. My website's puckerup.com. That's not safe for work. And next week, I'm launching my very own Patreon. So stay tuned for that. I'll tell you more about it when we talk next week.
Woo!
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Terramino on Voice America Variety.